Mariana, for the introduction. And, actually, the one issue in Maasvlakte, which is a big land reclamation area in Holland, where they're making new land and new harbors, was a project organized by Latitudes as well. The images you saw on the screen are pages from the new issue from the Italian Conversations, Art in the Age of Berlusconi. But I'll start here. Together with Rob Hamelink, I make this zine or magazine, Fucking Good Art. All the first issues were really small A3 pamphlets in which we invited artists, mainly friends, to write about exhibitions, works and events in Rotterdam. We just didn't want to leave all the writing to the academics, and we were curious what the makers would write. We hoped to have a bit more open conversation about what was on show, on the art, on view. Goodbye.
Yours.
I can imagine. Also, all the smaller art spaces, they tend to get no attention from any press, so we thought it would be a good idea to give them some more feedback and try to organize a bit more than the slap on the shoulder and saying, great, you made a beautiful show. It's not really helpful when you're showing. So here are some of the smaller issues. They were all made in Rotterdam, except the last one. We were invited by Maria Lind in Munich to make an issue, and it was interesting because actually she invited us to another local situation. It was not our own local situation, so totally different situation where suddenly you're outsider instead of insider. Here is a small strange way we distributed the the issue that we made in Rotterdam for the occasion of it was a very atypical number. It was like an action made as a reaction on the budget cuts on the project budgets, the subsidies for individual artists in Rotterdam. Actually, some artists and a journalist asked us to work on this, and it was something that worked because some money was relocated from production money for artists and funding for production. It was all relocated to the presentation institutes and was totally invisible. And some people found out, and we tried to make this clear and to find out what it means. Rob is here dressed as a hare because in Rotterdam, actually, it's funny, in many of the institutions, people have names of animals. We have a wolf, a fox, a hare. So sometimes we play with it in kind of a fable way. By the way, at this moment, something opposite is happening in Holland. I just heard this week on television there was a debate between Anne Meester, the director of Apple, and the state minister, the state secretary, you call it. And it's about the same kind of relocation of money that's kind of invisible, but it's very important because what they're now doing is these two post academies, the Rijksacademie and Jan van Eyck. I think they're very famous institutes. Also outside of Holland, there's many international artists studying there. Their whole funding, their whole budget is going to zero over 1 year. And that's something really totally unprecedented in Holland. There's something like rules about how you govern a country, and you cannot make so big changes because nobody can be reliable anymore. Even for private partners, the institutes cannot be reliable. And in this case with the schools, what they do is this budget, a part of this budget, because it will be much smaller, it will be given directly to students, to artists, and it's only for 50 people, and they turn into consumer students. Because with this, like they call it a backpack, they can go to an institute and buy their own education. But of course, these two institutes, they really cannot survive. They will not be there anymore. And working in Italy for a while and studying how things are running there, it really reminds of what happened over the last 15 years in Italy. Like, all the basic structures are gone or are not there. So even if an artist has a huge budget to do something, there's no basic structure to study or to... it's, by the way, three or two, by the way. This is also changing because in Italy now private persons are stepping into these legs, these holes of infrastructure, and there's many private schools, private post academies and stuff. That is very interesting. last summer in the Netherlands there was also another big round of budget cuts, and not only in the arts, but of course here we talk about the arts, but it's like in the whole of Europe. In the Netherlands, actually, a lot of people say it wouldn't really be necessary, but the same thing is happening of privatization, of course, and stopping all the basic infrastructures of the welfare state, of the whole project that started after the war. This issue we just published online. It was a collection of some existing text and speeches. But there's some really beautiful text for everybody who doesn't speak Dutch. Most of this is in Dutch. With Google Translate, I would advise you to look, for instance, at the text of this. It was a speech, actually, of this Olfarting author who gives a beautiful historic overview of how different countries developed a totally different infrastructure and ways of possibilities to work on art. And here I want to show the front page of this day that all the budget cuts were made clear, because I think it's interesting what kind of rhetorics are around this kind of measurements. Here it says in the big headline that cuts will make the country better, but it's put in a way that a doctor would say. So it's healing. It's a cure. Actually, everything will be better if you cut these things off. And I think these kind of headlines are all over Europe. It's not just because it's an ideological thing. It's clear. But here you see all the millions and millions for psychiatry, for healthcare, for it's all listed. And the interesting thing is down you see a little advertisement that says, If you make your targets, you deserve a nice present for yourself, so you can buy this car. And I think it's a clear so here is a small quote from an email that we got when we worked on this issue. There was a shall I give this so you can have a look? Because in the Italian issue, most of it is conversations with people we met. But there's also some assignments or some collaborations on photo series or articles. And Stefano Graziani took images in Naples, of all kind of places that are also disappearing now. It's public places that are about to collapse. Of course, you know that in the last year the House of the Gladiators collapsed in Pompeii. And in Italy, many people saw that really as a sign of the state of many institutes or places. And we asked Stefano to take pictures in, for instance, the National Library, where the roof is collapsing, and in Madre, which is probably now about to close already, the Contemporary Art Museum. And this is what he said, being earnest, I wouldn't be so worried about the museums, but about all the other institutes. And he also made the remark that Madre and some bigger museums, I think all over Europe, but in Italy it's very visible, they're in some kind of loop. The Madre, for instance, is a museum that's built with millions of euros to make a really impressive palace. And then after that, there's no money for making a program. So they're really dependent on private persons and collectors. And there's a kind of a loop of glamour and huge prestige and a lack of money for a normal program or having regular staff in the house to do something. So, one more. One little page from that same newspaper. Here you see that what happens is the opera houses, they all stay, but all the small production houses for theater, all the little theater lights you see, they are for the production houses and experimental places. So they're all red, so they all go away. The same for the theater above. The orchestras, you see it's half, dance is halved. And then downstairs, I don't know how they choose this little icon, but for contemporary art, it's this little tent below with the flag on top. And that's 5 out of 11 are disappearing. I don't know, there were so many talks this whole week from all the institutes in the Netherlands who showed their programs, and we're in this transparent cage on the art fair presenting this, and I don't know how many people told about the situation that all these institutes are in at the moment. One thing I also want to say that is very much, I learned about this in Italy as well, because working on this, we started to see during the year that all these things happened in Holland with the new government. We were working on all these conversations with the Italian people from the art scene. And this is also something that on this page is clear and that we saw in Italy. All the advisory board of all the peer review, all the boards of specialists, they're bypassed, and decisions about culture are made directly by politics instead of independence. I have no idea how all these things are in Spain at the moment, but I can imagine it's all different grades or different ways of this. Okay, I read a little bit here from the introduction. Meanwhile, when all this stuff above happened, we just finished Italian Conversations, Art in the Age of Berlusconi, a larger issue of our magazine. This issue is not about Berlusconi, but it's about art and the lives of those who make art and are affected by this age. You could say we live in age, but the age also lives in us. The Italian Conversations is about our journey through Italy in the year that Silvio Berlusconi stepped down from his throne. It is mainly consisting of conversations we had with many people in the arts during 7 trips we made to 7 places in Italy from January to May 2011. We made this book at the invitation of the NOMAS Foundation in Rome. NOMAS is a rather young foundation curated by Cecilia Conciani and Ilaria Gianni, and it's initiated by 2 collectors who thought it was important in Italy to support production and research. It took about a year and a half before we got financing sorted, and that this came from the Dutch public funding and from this foundation, and could start planning a traveling residency. Interestingly, the invitation from NOMAS Foundation was based, of course, on their interpretation of our previous issue. The Swiss issue was an issue about money in art, and the international edition Berlin was about the internationalization in the arts, all the artists and curators up in the air. rather than simply presenting the perspective of outsiders, our idea was to involve our 7 partners in the editorial process to create a dialogue of perspectives. During the exchange of numerous emails in which we tried to formulate what we could do with the invitation, Cecilia and Ilaria wrote what can be perceived as an assignment for this. I quote, "Italy is going through a very delicate political moment in which cultural production is considered a secondary issue to the government. The inadequacy of the system and of the state is in Italy often the element that triggers alternative and inventive solutions. We are very keen to invite Fucking Good Art to investigate Italy's complex territory, its spaces, people, models for culture vis-a-vis the current political and economical crisis. Italy is also a very fragmented country, lacking debate and systematic collaboration between institutions and initiatives. Within this framework, we believe this point of view of an outsider can map out the territory under the new circumstances and recount an alternative and fruitful story on the present cultural situation." We noticed that a lot of people in Italy mentioned the Netherlands as a model for a well-functioning infrastructure. They even talk about it in the future tense, like we are not there yet. But in contrast with this, we got the impression that the state of the public institutions and the lack of trust in them in Italy is rather a glimpse of what we can expect in the Netherlands than the other way around. So there's a few things I think we looked at all the time. It's this thing of the decline of these public institutions, how it's possible that for a Dutch person, it's really amazing how almost all Italians look at all the public institutes as something of the past, something totally outside of them, rather than as a commons. Although there's of course also a big movement now to claim back commons, and there were the big referenda claiming back the water, and, for instance. This is an image we did a lot of conversations with people, then we worked, we transcribed them, which was a really nice thing to do, because you all the time you're dealing with totally different kinds of speaking, different kinds of metaphors, different kinds of speaking English, different levels of being able to speak English. And then there's always this willingness to understand each other, which is a really beautiful thing actually about doing such a complex thing in a language that's nobody's first language. Concetto Posa, can you read this like this, or shall I read a little part? Yeah. This man is an older artist who is very clear in explaining how things changed over the years. And he's also been a teacher and an advisor for Bologna's public culture, which was a really big thing in Italy, how Bologna was able to mix, for instance, make an area where film and art and university and archives are combined and open and public. But if in Italy, if in Bologna you ask somebody what's the best time of Bologna, they say the 70s. And of course it's a bit sad because it's quite long ago. So we used stills of this in the issue as well. One thing that is, I think what I read in the papers lately is that also in Spain and Portugal, the highly educated people are just leaving, and in Portugal they're even going back to all the former colonies, which is totally interesting turnaround of powers. But in Italy there's already since almost 20 years a brain drain on a lot of in a lot of areas in science and also in art. And then there's always opportunities as well, how people cope with that and deal with that. For instance, I think the magazines, we all know all these magazines from Italy, mostly they're free press even. They have Mus, Kaleidoscope, they have Cura, and there's 10 more, I think. And for some reason, I think I heard this word beneficial brain drain, and I think this the circumstances that so many people are relocated, live in other centers and keep in contact, that's exactly why what this magazine's function on. It's a great thing actually. On the image you see Luca Lepinto, who is one of the editors of Nero magazine in Rome, who co-published this publication also. It's a free magazine and they publish, I think, 40,000. I mean, in the Netherlands, if you print 1,200 of anything, it's a lot in the arts, isn't it? What's the print run of Bach, for instance? Yeah. So they make 40,000 somehow. And in his hand, he has a magazine where one of the most famous art critics of Italy is showing a jacket for an advertisement for a fashion label. It's Achille Bonito Oliva. Then I want to show one other story. We went to a museum close to Milan. It's a photo museum that started around an archive, the Archive of Space, in the 80s. It actually started from a budget from the preservation of monuments. But they asked photographers to document certain areas in town, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful archive of many great photographers from Italy, made whole series, and they're all in small boxes. But after the 90s, when the art got so commercialized, or artists started to work only with galleries, etc., they couldn't get photographers to add to the archive. The photographers would be only, you could only contact them through the gallery. They would ask a very high fee, and they wouldn't give a whole research to the archive. They would give one very big deboned framed image. So the whole archive needed to make an extension to put in these huge deboned and other kinds of framed photos. And there was simply no money for that anymore. So in a way, the archive stopped for this. At the same time, one of the curators is also a freelancer, so he's also doing his own projects, and one of his own projects is another kind of archive that's perhaps something that can now grow between the folds of the old institutes. And together with a sociologist, they collect family photos and the stories that belong to them, and it's called Foresta Nos Costa. On the internet, there's a huge archive that you can look for on all different. How do you say? You can look for a subject or a time or a family. It's beautiful, and it's a totally different way of making an archive, and it's moving away from the professionalized production of images again. This is Pietro Alfonsi on the last picture of this series, and it's a beautiful little story that perhaps is a. It's about how he gets this hat. So he's making this communist movement as a bit of a joke, but not just a joke. He got this hat from a friend, and he used to have this whole long history as part of the Communist Party. But then he got into a conflict with the Communist Party after being a member for 20, 30, 40 years when he was in his 50s. And suddenly they called him a fascist because he didn't agree on something. And he was so disappointed in this that being critical about something he would be pushed to the other side immediately, that he left this party. And if you listen to more people in Italy, I think more people see this point where it was so much polarized that the only thing you could still do was being apolitical or non-ideological. On the next page is an article by Marco Scottini, by the way, who is doing the NABA, director of the NABA private academy in Milan. So the whole book is ordered in these cities, in this trip we made, and in every one of the chapters, one person was guide. In Milan, that was Chiara Agnello of the Kerov, also an archive actually, a video by an artist who started in the 80s to collect video art in Italy. Here's part of this series of images in Naples of the Institute. Here's the start of the Turin chapter. In every chapter we also did a kind of a evaluation with this guide, and in Turin it was interesting that the guides were two artists, part of a collective but also working together, and one of them is how do you call it in English again? Volcanologist, expert of volcanoes? Volcanologist, yeah, that's difficult. And so it was interesting, we considered Turin the city of the slow food also, and in one of these topics of where words are different, English is differently used by different people as well. In Italy many people talk about il sistema. It's always, when you talk about art, it's about il sistema, and that is this whole the whole I think it's it was written by Achille Bonito Oliva as an analysis of all the roles in the arts, but now it's used sometimes even more as a recipe of sticking to these roles. And we thought perhaps we should introduce ecosystem instead of system for this. And these two artists, they are in their practice working with ecology, and because of his profession, I mean, if you study volcanoes, you're used to looking at totally different time scale. So in this conversation, they told us about the third landscape, which is, I think, very relevant issue, because it's about all these big empty buildings, stone ruins, and about the nature that grows in between, or what happens in between and on. And because as I understood, many people see the institutions in Italy as petrified old bodies that are not alive anymore, and the new life has to grow in between. People talk about functioning in the faults of the institution, in the faults of the institution, or for instance here this whole third landscape is about these places that are left over after. Of course in Turin it's very practically right as well, because it's this all the Fiat built, it's the Detroit of Italy. In the end of the book is what we always did, a list of artist run spaces and curator run spaces in these independent spaces, and all these partners compiled part of the list of their own territory, as they say. We called it the archipelago because that's how many, many people in Italy referred to it. They talked about a leopard skin, dots on a leopard skin, or little pearls with nothing in between. So all the time this metaphor of this third landscape, or this sea with islands, or so we took the archipelago as a name for the list of all these spaces. And there's many of them. There's many, many spaces. So this is, for instance, only Rome and Bologna. One of the people we spoke with, he said something about this, about these islands, or this. He said. Um, he says the artist's task is to provide an oblique gaze vis-à-vis the centrality of the system, to maintain a lateral position. And I think that's what many people choose to do in Italy. And I see it also as something like being able to have a look at the age we live in, and perhaps the do-it-yourself attitude that we like so much, we can also see in another light in Italy or in the age of Berlusconi, because it's the only thing that everybody agrees on, perhaps in Italy, that you better can do it yourself. But it's also what, of course, Berlusconi is promoting, that you have to do it all yourself. So you are doing it all yourself, or somebody else tells you you have to do it all yourself. But anyhow, there is many people who do things themselves and who also meet up again and coordinate things or exchange. Anyhow, let's see if this works.
But all of us are trying to do the little stuff in the little set. And maybe, Roberto was saying, why don't we go and take the spaces, in cultural stuff, we're art stuff, so our space, the museum, is not like our seminar. That's also his point. So to give back to the museum the responsibility to be an institution. So it's a good question. Like, is it good to stay in the cellar, or that has been so strong and it brings at this point? So
sorry. Normally it just runs as a streaming video. But her point is clear. She said that in Bologna, everything that is happening there, everything that's worthwhile over the years, is all these things that developed in the basement. And now somebody asked her, because she's also doing wonderful things in the basement, let's say. And then somebody asked her, but is it okay? Should we stay in the basement? Should we do all these little islands in the basement, or should we try reclaim back the spaces that were there? But perhaps it's not either or, but I think it's interesting questions, and not only for Italy, but perhaps they're stronger, easier visible there. That's it.
Thank you very much.
I can show some more clips of people talking if you want, but you can also ask.
Maybe we can open it up to the audience and let conversation. I mean, I just want to say first of all that I think the work you do with Rob is amazing, and this whole idea of a curiosity driven research and really embedding yourself in a context is, I think, something very important. I've got kind of two observations and comments, questions. The first of which, I wonder if, obviously you mentioned several examples of things that you encountered that you found inspiring. You mentioned Moose and Kaleidoscope as these, and also the idea of these islands in the basement. And I know also you have an interview with Vincenzo and Bruno from Peephole.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could mention maybe another couple of highlights of projects that you found totally inspiring and making it against all the difficulties of the context. That was part one. I have part two.
Yeah. I think we encountered many inspiring and beautiful initiatives. People is interesting because they really try to formulate a way of doing this. They once said making a project space without a museum. So, but they want to make this very clear and transparent structure that can survive. So they're also working on inventing a new institute in a way, after the old institutes there at least are not so well trusted anymore. But they managed to show really beautiful things and also show, for instance, older artists in connection with the new, younger starting artists. And they funded their whole place with auctions, which they see as a temporary measure. They don't see it as an ideal, but in a way they showed that there's a huge solidarity under the artists in Milan to start this and to support this and to together finance this whole place. That's beautiful. And then of course there's a conversation with Cesare Pietro Justi, who is a very interesting artist, and he also started structures and places, for instance in the south, Oresta. They had a place that's very well known, a place for discussion and meeting. But he decided to function in the folds of the institute. He's telling about this difficulty of starting this structure and how to continue your work as an artist within this. So he's now exploring the possibilities to use the institute and function in the folds of it. And of course NOMAS is an interesting initiative as well. And there's more, it's all slightly different, but there are some of these foundations. They started with collectors who saw that something else is necessary, that artists cannot survive and cannot function within a structure that's mainly like prizes and singling out single artists and then nothing is there for, afterwards. So they start these kind of foundations where they where they help production and where they focus on research-based projects, and that's really interesting. And one more thing in the south, I was totally captured by the south of Italy, where I have the feeling more and more people go back after they studied or started a career in the north, they go back there. And it's also interesting that instead of empty office buildings or empty industrial buildings, like we all know in the north that artists use or art uses, it's tourist buildings. So there's a whole new possibility of empty spaces. You only have to go out of it 2 months a year. In the summer, you cannot be there with the rest of the year. It's interesting to see.
And the other is more of a comment rather than a question, but you mentioned also already Cesare Pietro Justi, and I was going to ask you about the if there was any further points of contact or if you overlapped in any sense with the project Dora Garcia, which was in part of the Spanish, well, it was the Spanish Pavilion, and in a sense there was it was also an initiative from an outsider to Italy, investigating the historical context and trying to dig beneath the skin of the contemporary veneer of Italy and into things that have been forgotten or suppressed. And I wonder if that was something you were aware of or that came up in conversations that the work that Dora was doing.
No, we only encountered it later because Stefano Graziani, he also worked on Dora's project there. But I have to say we were also islands then because we totally didn't know what she was doing. Of course, at the biennial, we saw a bit of it, and it's very interesting, her collection of stories and people that she showed there and that she put together in this book. Did you see it? Yeah, it's very very interesting parallel story. Yeah, you're right.
It's very, very telling that perhaps the most complete, if fragmentary, recent study of Italian production has been done by non-Italians.
But all invited by Italians.
Yeah. Like a self-analysis.
Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah.
Are there any other questions? Perhaps.
And I don't know if there are other researchers as well, but they are perhaps not open for us because they're only in Italian. So I have no idea if they're Italian.
Did you have any relation or do any investigation with the Centro Sociale, the social centers in Italy? I know they are particularly strong in Rome.
Yes, but we saw a lot of them that were closed, and many people told us about them and about the importance of these places in the past decades. But I think it's not so long ago that most of them shut down. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. Yes, we didn't see it. So, but I have to say, because we were hosted by people and we were really short times in every city, we looked through the eyes of specific people who based their choice on what they thought from our episode. So it was a game in a way of what we would see. Of course, you always have to make a choice, and in this case, this was really decided by the structure of the travel. And perhaps normally we hang around more and have less organized trips, let's say. And we started to think, working towards the end of working on this, that hanging around is much more efficient than having efficient trips, meeting lots of people for research, probably, in our case. But the social centers, yeah, it's a pity. I think it was so much focused on the contemporary art, and I don't know if that is still so much in the social centers. So for instance, in Milan, they are three times taken over by different people, and the first generation who started these centers and who made this very strong connection between contemporary art, theater, activism, they for a long time do found different structures by now. And the generation that takes over, perhaps I'm totally wrong, but we were not taken, and we were often told that it wasn't that alive in the same sort of way anymore.